Sports Center?
I have for 8.
Oh, that's right.
Call the House Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development to order. It's Tuesday, May 5th. We made the turn, headed for home on Senate bills. It'll start with a public hearing on Senate Bill 367. Barbara, Senator Boquist.
Designates SB 367 designates January 29 of each year Thomas Paine Day.
Fantastic. We'll have to get used to saying SB.
Yes.
Thanks for your patience, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Senator Brian Boquist, District 12, 5 counties in the west portion of the valley. As part of the sesquicentennial, the 150th birthday, right, whatever that is, 150th birthday of Oregon, some constituents in my district asked me to sponsor Thomas Paine Day as part of that celebration. And for those of you who don't remember, something that we're lacking on the Senate side, you notice I said the Senate side, I didn't say on the House side, I don't want to be older, but Thomas Paine wrote Common Sense, published in 1776, challenged the authority of the British government and the royal monarchy. In the plain language that Paine used, we don't use that in the Senate either, by the way, the plain language that Paine used spoke to the common people of America and was the first work to openly ask for independence from Great Britain. I'm sure members over here would like to have independence at times from our chamber. No doubt about that.
He has a memory.
He does. I do. Actually, I enjoyed my time over here. There are a couple of sayings out there that I didn't know. When a bill came up, I had to remember who actually said these things. Like, if there must be trouble, let it be in my day, that my child may have peace. And the one I love the best is, government, even in its best, is but a necessary evil. In its worst state, an intolerable one. And then, of course, the one we all love, the government is best which governs least. And all of those came from Common Sense and Thomas Paine. So in this year of our state's birthday, in recognition of some of my constituents in my district, I brought forth this bill as part of the 150th birthday of the state of Oregon. Sesquicentennial? All right, what can I say?
Thank you, Senator Bowers. I'm glad you're here. Are there any questions for the senator?
I just want to hear him say sesquicentennial a few more times.
We can practice that. It could be the price of exit.
Sesquicentennial.
There you go.
Do I get credit for that?
Nicely done. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, can you tell me what the connection to Oregon and is to Thomas Paine?
Common sense, Representative Holy.
Good answer.
Very good answer. Very good answer. Are there other questions? Seeing none.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on Senate Bill 367? We didn't have anyone sign up.
I don't see anyone.
And we do have the fiscal and revenue statements. This bill is ready to go, so we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 367 and open a work session on Senate Bill 367.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 367 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Galizio moves Senate Bill 367 to the floor with the due pass recommendations. Or any discussion? Representative Galizio.
Yes, I just want to thank Senator Boquist. Thomas Paine is my favorite founding father, and appreciate it. And I think the connection to Oregon is, you know, we're part of the United States as far as I can remember. In addition to that, just some of the ideas put forth, free public education, and was vehemently against slavery, was considered a radical of the time. So I think it's very appropriate to the sesquicentennial.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Any further discussion? Representative Holby.
Mr. Chair, I'll be in favor of this bill January 29th. It happens to also be my only granddaughter's birthday. Love it.
Very good. With that, is there any objection to the motion for the bill to head to the floor with the due pass recommendation? I don't see any. The motion is adopted. Senate Bill 367 goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Galizio, you already betrayed significant knowledge of Thomas Paine. Would you be willing to carry the bill?
I would be honored.
Fantastic. Representative Galizio will carry, and we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 367.
Is that a feed and tariff bill?
Cap and trade.
All right.
How you doing, dude? And we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 197.
SB 197 permits the Public Utility Commission to use temporary status appointment for student law clerks up to 24 months. Declares an emergency effective upon passage.
Go
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon.
For the record, I'm Lee Beyer, Chair of the Oregon Public Utility Commission, and I have with me Mike Grant, our Chief Administrative Law Judge. This is a simple bill. This is a bill that would allow the PUC to follow the lead of the Department of Justice in the Office of Administrative Hearings and hire law students for up to 24 months. It provides a savings to both the ratepayers who pay the bills for this stuff, and it also provides a unique learning experience for the law students. So it's in the true sense of the word, I think this is a win-win bill. What we use the law clerks for, as you know, our processes are very legalistic, if you will, operate like a court, and our administrative law judges are supported by, it's usually one to two law clerks who work with us for a period of time and do a lot of the legal research and preparation for the cases in front of them. I think it's a unique sense. I could go into a longer explanation, but essentially it means that we can hire them as temporary employees for more than 6 months, up to 2 years, which happens to be about the time. You know, it's, most of them come in and they either do a year during after their first year, or they'll do up to 2 years. None of them stay on after that and go off someplace else. So, nice little bill, good experience, and good precedent through the Department of Justice as well as the Office of Administrative Hearings. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious what the hourly rate for a law clerk is now. When I clerked, it was $6 an hour. I'm just curious if it's more than that.
I think you move minimum wage up higher than that.
Yeah. You can compare it to the wage for whatever the wage for legislators.
About $11.
$11. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No problem. My question was just why it needs to be in statute. Are you doing it already? Is it
because, Mr. Chair, the reason is that the limitation is in statute.
Okay. Good. Good answer. Are there questions? Let's see. Very good. Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard on Senate Bill 197?
Thank
you very much. That will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 197 and open the work session on Senate Bill 197. We have a revenue and fiscal impact statement. This bill is ready to go.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 197 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Iglesias, I move Senate Bill 197 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Foley?
Mr. Chair, I don't expect that I'll be voting no on this bill, but I do have some concerns as we are in other committees discussing the definition of temporary employees and the such, and I'm a little bit, I guess, curious as to whether this bill will be consistent or... I guess it wouldn't matter if we pass the bill, whether it's consistent with that proposal as well. So anyway, I just have a little bit of curiosity, I guess, or maybe concern.
Shall we ask the chair back up to comment on that? Or I'm looking to you. You'd like to leave that here. Representative Bentz?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holy, it's in my experience law clerks that it's a temporary job by its very nature, and thus I don't think it... I think there's a good case that can be made that this is a sui generis situation, and thus we don't need to worry about it being carried over into other areas. That would be my thought on it.
With the possible exception of legislators working for a low hourly wage, I guess maybe the lawyers are going to be more interested in going somewhere where they earn more than $11 an hour?
No, unlikely.
Good. I don't see any other discussion. So Representative Galizio has moved. Senate Bill 187 to the floor for due pass recommendation. Is there any objection to that motion? I don't see any. The motion carries. Senate Bill 197 heads to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Bentz, would you be willing to carry, given that you have been a law clerk?
Honored to. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bentz will carry, and we'll close the first session on Senate Bill 197. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 217A.
SB 217A allows Historic Preservation Revolving Loan Fund to be used for promoting cultural preservation public education.
Thank you. Phil Donovan, Stephanie Striffler, Wilson Wing, and Michael Mason. I don't see Michael Mason here, so the other three, if you'd like to come forward, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Stephanie Striffler, Senior Assistant Attorney General, Oregon Department of Justice. This bill is designed to provide an additional tool for enforcement of cultural resources laws that are already on the books. What it does is to authorize the pre-existing historic preservation revolving loan fund to be used for enforcement of these laws. The bill is supported by the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and the Coquille Tribe, and then we're also expecting to hear from two other tribes today. The bill does three things. It amends 358-644 regarding the historic preservation revolving loan fund to add two purposes to it. One purpose being education regarding cultural resources protection, the other being expenses incurred by the Attorney General in enforcing laws that protect cultural resources. It also provides that the fund can be used for that the fund can accept gifts and grants, and also that attorney fees and costs that are recovered in the exercise of enforcement authority can go to the fund. So, as I said, Oregon laws that are already on the books protect Indian burials and archaeological sites under both civil and criminal law. We've had a question in the past about federal laws, and the reason that we need to enforce state law is because federal laws only apply on federal lands or regarding projects where there's federal funding or where there's interstate trafficking. State officials often hear complaints about violations of the state law. I've heard from state police they've received several reports of looting and vandalism over the past year. I'm a participant in the government-to-government tribal-state cultural resource cluster group. This is an issue that often comes up there and the need for additional enforcement. The Attorney General has civil enforcement authority to enforce these laws at this point, but we have never had funding for these actions. In addition, on occasion, our DA assistance program gets requests to work with DAs on enforcing these laws, but this kind of enforcement is not what folks generally expect those funds, the DA assistance funds, to be used for. There is no fiscal impact because the appropriation that was in the original bill was amended out in the Senate. So there's no appropriation, but what we hoped was that this funding mechanism could nevertheless become law so that if there were gifts or grants or attorney fees recovered, we would have a funding mechanism that could accept those funds. So we heard about the sesquicentennial. I'll say it slowly this afternoon. And this is also appropriate for the sesquicentennial because these archaeological resources are a very valuable part of Oregon's heritage. And we ask that the bill be passed from committee with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Questions?
Mr. Donovan?
Thank you, Chair Reed. Members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. Before you is written testimony submitted on behalf of our chairman, Anton Minthorn. Just want to register a few comments to share with you. Our support for this legislation is found in our longstanding policy to protect cultural resources wherever they may be found. Something for you all to consider is the fact that if you consider the Indian Reservation, that we reside upon, you know that it is next door to the city of Pendleton, but yet our Aboriginal territory extends far beyond and in fact includes much of Northeast Oregon, and this kind of action that you're being asked to take here can provide resources to protect the enforcement of state cultural laws. So we think that authorizing the Historic Preservation Revolving Loan Fund to cover the work of the Attorney General's Office will help protect historic properties around the state. In fact, this will benefit all the citizens of Oregon by assisting in prosecution of archaeological crimes, while also helping help educate historic property owners, and they can better maintain their own properties. So with that, we'd ask for your support. Appreciate the time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Any questions? I had one. In thinking about the additional sort of purpose that the loan fund could pursue, do you have a sense of how that might impact the ability to fulfill the original purpose? Or on the other hand, would this help its fundraising potential, do you think?
My understanding, Mr. Chair, is that the original purpose has not resulted in funding going into that fund, and so I think you are right that this these additional purposes might help with fundraising for the original purpose as well.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Benz.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there any monies in the fund now?
Mr. Vice Chair, I understand that there are not at this time.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, please. Is it, Ms. Donovan, the thought of the tribe possibly to contribute some funds to this, I'm going to call it a source? Do you know, or has that been discussed?
Chair Reed, Vice Chair Benz, unfortunately, I'm not privy to any conversations that would indicate that there's an intent to contribute to this fund at this time.
I have had occasion to be involved in some of these situations, one recently involving the Oregon Historical Society and the medal, the Lewis and Clark medal, that was determined, I think, ultimately to have been property of the tribe, although I actually, when I was elected to the legislature here, haven't had a chance to follow up on what actually happened. But it does seem that situations like this do come up, and I was just curious if those are the types of situations that the fund would be expected to fund in the event that monies finally make their way into it. Is that your thinking on it?
Chair Reed, Vice Chair Benz, that is our hope, and we've been in conversations with the Attorney General's office and feel like both the state and the tribes are on the same page.
Final follow-up. I'm just curious, though. We seem to do things here that they look good here on paper, but I just wonder what really happens. So if we pass this, what happens next? Either one of you.
Mr. Vice Chair, right now what the situation is that some of these enforcement issues come up and there isn't a way to enforce the law, or there have been occasions where the Attorney General's office has had to rely on an agency like the State Police, whose budget, of course, is not very flush right now to fund enforcement. So our hope would be that in the event these situations come up in the future, there could possibly be grant funds or possibly donations, or I also understand that it's possible that this fund could be a source for, or not a source, but a location for ordered restitution in the event that another jurisdiction, like the federal government, perhaps were to enforce related laws. So our hope would be that over the years, and hopefully in the near future, we would see some seed money go into this fund, and that once that seed money was there, we would have the ability to take continuing actions where we would be able to get recoveries that would add to the fund. I hope that's the what your question was aimed at, Mr. Vice Chair.
It was. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Yeah, just a question. It seems like we don't allow the state police to, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I guess I heard this, and I could be wrong, but once they pull somebody over, they don't get, you know, the revenue into the agency. It goes to the general fund, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I believe that's right.
And so it seems like right here we're setting up wherever they recover money, it goes back to fund their agency. It, you know, it's there's a one-for-one thing, and that doesn't seem right.
I'd like to...
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, this kind of fund is not unusual with respect to the Department of Justice and say, consumer protection enforcement that we do. So the model is very similar to that kind of enforcement.
Other comments? Questions?
Final comment. It has to do with the Section 3, Sub 1 provision that changes the showing of special or irreparable damage. Was the thinking there that, because it does away with that requirement, was the thinking there that this would allow folks outside to have standing, outside of those who might have been especially irreparably damaged? Is that why we're being asked to make that change? Is that to broaden? My question is that to broaden the scope of those allowed to bring action under this statute?
Mr. Vice Chair, I don't think it broadens the scope of who can bring action under the statute, but it broadens the scope of when the fund could be used, so that it lessens a restriction.
It appeared to me that you are correct that any person can bring the action. Therefore, it's just a matter of whether or not they have to show special or irreparable damage, and now it indicates that that would not be required. And I was just curious why we're lowering the bar, so to speak.
Mr. Vice Chair, just because that would be perhaps difficult under some circumstances to be able to show that.
That answer actually works for me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Simple enough. Thank you very much. Any other comments or questions? I don't see any. And we're still in public hearing, correct?
No.
Work session?
We're in work session.
Very good. Any other comments? Don't see any. We have the revenue and fiscal impact statements. So I think we're ready for this bill to go. If you desire. 217A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 217A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Alicia moves Senate Bill 217A engrossed to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Thatcher.
I guess I don't feel comfortable with an enforcement agency reaping the benefit of their enforcement actions. And to me, I see that happening here.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? I don't see any. Given that, we have a roll call vote, please.
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Chair Benz?
Aye.
Chair Greenfield?
Aye.
Chair Reed?
Aye.
Motion having received the required majority is declared passed. Senate Bill 217A heads to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there anyone who would like to carry this bill? No one look away. I will carry the bill. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 217A. Had some folks join us. Let's take next. Senate Joint Resolution 39, public hearing.
SJR 39 recognizes and honors Pendleton Roundup Centennial Celebration.
Very good. I see Representative Jensen, Representative Smith. Gentlemen. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
My name is Bob Jensen. I'm state representative from House District 58. That is a portion of Umatilla County. It includes Pendleton, Hermiston, and a number of smaller communities thereabouts. And it is a pleasure and a privilege for me to be here to recommend to you the passage of the Joint Resolution, Senate Joint Resolution 39, which will recognize the centennial celebration of the Pendleton Roundup. It's been about longer ago than sometimes I like to remember. The Yanomamu in South America have a numbering system that goes 1, 2, and more than 2. And it's more than 2 years ago that I made the trip from the high country in Montana to Pendleton to interview for a job. And as I considered that on my drive over, I thought, Pendleton, what? Well, there were two things I knew about Pendleton. I knew about the shirts, Pendleton shirts, the Pendleton woolen mills. Having grown up on a sheep ranch, that was somewhat exciting to, get a little closer to that product than I had been for a few years. So the Pendleton Woolen Mills rung a bell for me. And the other thing, some of you will remember, I was running around here with the aid of a walker at the beginning of the session. And the origins of that walker go back even before 2 years ago that I, more than 2 years ago that I went to Pendleton. I go back to when I was a much younger fella and fancied myself as a bronc rider. And on one particular occasion, the bronc went one way and I went another, and with multiple fractures in one leg and the knee, I bought myself for that lovely afternoon a substantial lifetime, it seemed like, of trouble with the knee. So the one thing other thing I knew about Pendleton was the Pendleton Roundup. The Roundup is certainly one of the premier shows in rodeo in America. There are some Roundup or some rodeos that may be larger, but as a family show, none excel the Roundup. So it, having gone 100 years now and gone through a good deal of good times and some not so good times, it is just a great pleasure for me to be here and present this bill for your consideration and ask you kindly to move it on for us. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to respond to them at your...
Thank you, Representative Jensen. I imagine there might be some questions about your history with the Roundup. Perhaps we can hear from the other legislators first.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Nelson, State Senator from Pendleton. I represent District 29, four counties out in eastern Oregon. And from behalf of the Pendleton Roundup, Letterbuck! I always say that at the radio, and they say, you always say that too soft, let her fly, you know. So, trying to be enthusiastic about this. I didn't have the exact same experiences as Bob. I was born and raised in Pelton, and my first job was ushering at the Happy Canyon, which is the nighttime show that goes along with there. And I did that because he got paid $1 a night, or $4 a night, I think, in silver dollars, and you got to go into the dance free. So my extracurricular activities are a little different than the good representatives. But, you know, the Pendleton Roundup, as Bob said, is just, I mean, it really is an institution. You know, regardless if you're a cattle person or a horse person, you really get involved in the community. There's, I don't know, thousands of volunteers. It's really basically put on by volunteer folks. If I can just make kind of a And aside, another commentary on our ethics bill. If we didn't have our ethics bill, I could offer you folks tickets to the pound around it. And it's my belief that all of us legislators, one, we ought to go to the Pelton Roundup, we ought to go to the Shakespearean Theater, we ought to, each of us ought to spend some time in the Portland area and going through the zoos and the museums and the cultural arts centers there. But we can't do that under our current law. But the offer is made, I think I can offer a place to stay for him, can I? I don't know.
The offer is understood. We appreciate that.
So please, I hope you please support this bill, and it really is an important thing for the community.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Representative Greg Smith, and I have the distinct pleasure of representing the suburbs of Pendleton, and today I'm here to support Senator Nelson and Representative Jensen. I represent District 57, which includes the surrounding land around the city of Pendleton. Just very quickly, I would just want to lend my support to the Pendleton Roundup. You heard Representative Jensen's story about riding the bucks and the experience he had, and you heard Senator Nelson's story. Well, my story is I'm the one up in the stands laughing at the two of them during rodeo. The Pendleton Roundup is not only a celebration for the city of Pendleton, but it's a celebration for all of Eastern Oregon. It's an opportunity for agriculture and for the cattle industry and for our tribal neighbors and for small business and for everyone to come together and to celebrate harvest in September. This is a great opportunity to recognize 100 years of that celebration, and Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate your strong consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe just a comment. You know, I grew up, I was born in Eugene, and was always my favorite was the Emerald Empire Roundup, actually. But in the late 60s, I moved to La Grande, and the Pendleton Roundup was actually the last time I was there was in 1969 for that roundup, which would be 40 years ago. Love to come back, and if I have a place to stay. But I also, you know, have to mention my other favorite rodeo since the Pendleton Roundup sort of took over for me was the Chief Joseph Days, which is Wallala Joseph, Oregon area, Wallala Lake. But anyway, it is a great event from my memory. I'd love to revisit it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holy. Representative Benz, do you need to talk about the Snake River Stampede and the...
No.
Okay, go ahead.
Having watched, I have lost track of how many rodeos, many opportunities to compare the Pendleton Roundup to St. Paul or Caldwell or Calgary, on and on. It's been hugely rewarding to see that Pendleton has, I think, grown and become a better show over the years, because it's so much work and such a great reflection on your community and all those volunteers. Knowing lots of the folks that are there, it helps, of course, that I have five little brothers, three of them who were involved in a rodeo one way or the other. Two of them ended up just like you did, a representative, with bad knees. So I avoided that, thank goodness, and I can still walk, but that doesn't take away from my appreciation for the hard community work that's taken to keep the Pendleton Roundup what it is today. It's a huge credit to Oregon.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to just make sure for the record, did we hear that there was an Emerald Empire Roundup?
I think I heard something like that.
Tie-dye 10-gallon hat.
Patchouli oil booth.
The story writes itself, doesn't it, Representative Gilliam?
I just want to get that on the record.
Off the grass.
We got a million of them. Thank you, colleagues, for bringing this forward. I had a couple of questions on this. Now, where is this held each year?
There's actually a lot of ways to get there from here. But
would you like to tell me personally how to get there?
It's held in a little big town of Pendleton, and it's very easy. All you have to do is get on I-5, go north to Portland, get on I-84, and just go east until you get there.
All right. Well, we'll follow up there, Mr. Chair.
And our I'm sure there will be a number of other people who would be happy to tell you where to go, Representative.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. It's a follow-up, so just hold on. Follow-up.
Representative, what you needed to follow up with?
I was just going to suggest that Representative Gilliam go to St. Louis and get on a wagon train and try to get there. So.
Thank you.
Well, anyway, I just want to congratulate you. Clearly, you are beginning to approach the fame and fun of the Malala Buckaroo, and I wish you the best.
I'm just curious, Bob, out of the 100 years that Pendleton Roundup has been occurring, how many have you gone to?
More than two.
How about you?
Let's see. I started in probably about in the late 1940s. There's a cowboy by the name of Harry Charter. He was the big cowboy in those days, and he's a great big guy, and he was always winning all the stuff. But sometime in the late 40s when I started.
So you can safely say most of them, huh?
Represented here.
Well, I would share with you, Mr. Chair and Representative Thatcher, my youngest daughter, who is 6 years old, is in the process of looking for a horse to begin preparation to one day hopefully become a princess, because those princesses do come from outside of Umatilla County as well, from the great county of Morrow and Union. And so there's a future generation who are looking forward to celebrating the Roundup as well.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Chair, just to follow up on it, would be completely inappropriate if the Roundup Court were not mentioned with this. As we talk about the Roundup and the centennial coming up for the Roundup, a remarkable group of young ladies who make an incredible commitment of their time to serve in that capacity. And believe me, they are some of the finest athletes you will ever see. And if you don't think so, get on one of those horses and ride it in the way they do, and you will come to be a real believer.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Appreciate you being here. We have one other person who has who signed up to testify. Thank you very much for your testimony. Carl Cullum. And while he's coming forward, let me ask if there's anyone else who would like to be heard on this resolution. Don't see anyone, so we'll look to you, Mr. Cullen, to wrap it up.
Thank you, Chair Reed, members of the committee. For the record, I am Carl Cullham, and I am the publicity director for the Pendleton Roundup. And I'm here this afternoon to show our support from the Roundup Board for this Senate joint resolution. Those three, quite honestly, are a hard act to follow, but and part of their comments are why I am here today. From the view of the board, the Pendleton Roundup is just not important to Pendleton or to the rodeo. It is a regional event that we take great pride in presenting each year. And we are thoroughly excited about a 100th anniversary and want it to represent not only Pendleton, but the region, the state, and, of course, the sport of rodeo in the way it should be. And we really appreciate the consideration of this joint resolution by your committee. And with that, I just offer myself up for any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cullen. Any questions? Representative Holby.
What's the date of the Roundup?
Now you've kind of tripped me up, because this year, for 2009, it starts on the 16th of September, is the official date for the performance. But every year, it is the second full week in September. So in our anniversary year of the 100th, it will be the second full week in September.
I note on line 15 of the resolution, it says September 11th to 18th, 2008.
Yeah, and that it's a full week of activity. That September 11th is probably the starting of that full week. So, and then the performances start on the following Wednesday. Thank you, Chair Reed.
Thank you. Chair. Any questions? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So which television station or cable, who televises the roundup now? Is that S-Ban?
Nobody televises the roundup at this town.
It's an opportunity, Representative Gilliam.
ESPN.
It has been televised in the past, but currently we have no television rights for the roundup.
Go ahead. Do you have an idea of what the dollar impact is on Oregon that the roundup generates?
Approximately $22 to $23 million per year is what the economic impact to the region and to the state is.
How many volunteers work there?
We have approximately, at last count, it's somewhere between 900 and 1,000 volunteers for the roundup itself. Our sister organization, it was mentioned, the Happy Canyon Night Show, which is conducted at the same time, then has their own list of volunteers that number in the hundreds as well. So it's well over 1,000 volunteers from the community and the outlying areas that help present the roundup.
Just to follow up on Representative Bent's question, do you have a sense of how much of that economic impact are people coming from outside of the state of Oregon? And then to even a little further, finer point on it, how many of those folks might not be described as part of the rodeo circuit or rodeo community?
I can give you a general sense without actual numbers, Chair Reed, that it's... People come from all over, and while there is a local contingent of the folks from Pendleton, Pilot Rock, Heppner, Wallowa Enterprise that come to enjoy the roundup, I think that it's an influx of money from generally the Pacific Northwest and the nation to some extent. As far as the difference between numbers, the estimate is somewhere in the neighborhood of 60,000 added, what I'll call residents, for the week of roundup to Pendleton, which I believe the population now is around 16,000 to 17,000. So that's how much the population of Pendleton increases in that 1 week time. As far as contestants, the contestant numbers last year were just over 600 contestants. So
great, thank you, Representative Benson.
Last two questions, Mr. Chair. What's the largest amount that somebody can win on the cowboy side of things there?
Career change.
But I could put it in a little bit different perspective, because depending on some of the added money that gets put in there, but the purse for the Pendleton Roundup is approximately $350,000 per year. And then you divide that amongst the different events and the number of finishers that are in each event. Generally, I'd say somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 5,000 to 6,000, but I don't want to guarantee that number, Representative Bence. The other part that I'll add to it is that one of the things that attracts contestants to Pendleton and is one of the traditions that we have that is a little bit different than other rodeos is that we have a number of prizes that are also provided. For instance, Pendleton Woolen Mill is a great supporter of the Pendleton Roundup, and we provide blankets to the event winner, saddles, and those kind of things. In fact, I can't remember the name of the contestant, but the contestant was quoted one time in the newspaper about coming to Pendleton. He thought it was so much fun, and the paper made some comment about not only was it fun, but all the prizes, and the paper made a comment about when he was riding out of the arena, all the stuff that he had fall off of his horse as he was leaving made the arena look like it was a garage sale. So.
Other questions? I don't see any.
Representative Holvey wanted to know where you parked your horse.
That didn't bring a horse this time. Okay. I don't think I would have made it today if I would have tried to ride a horse here, Representative. I do want to make a side comment that's interesting. I grew up in Pendleton, Oregon. my father worked for the state, and I, as a young child, as a high schooler, had to go to Portland, and I graduated from Grant High School. And there was a comment made in my yearbook that was the same thing, that we kept looking for your horse outside, but we never saw it tied up to the high school.
Which shows how dated any of my jokes are. I just wanted to thank you for taking the time out to come here today. I mean, it's significant. I appreciate you, the effort to come here today and discuss this with us. Some of us in the suburbs or the metro area, I feel like an anthropologist. Probably if I went there, it would be really fascinating for me. So,
did you say if or when?
Well, yeah. I don't know. Maybe if Senator Nelson allows me to stay over at his house, if the rules are suspended. Anyway, thank you for coming today.
Thank you, and I encourage you all to attend. And I want to offer a special thanks to Senator Jensen and to Representative Smith. Representative Jensen and Senator Nelson. I want to thank all of them for their support of this, too. The 100th is going to be exciting, and if any of you decide a time to come, I highly recommend next year. In fact, we're having some throwback events, and Representative Jensen may just have his chance to compete once again.
That might be the best attraction you've laid out yet.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you. Appreciate
you
being here. With that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 39 and open a work session on Senate Joint Resolution 39. Are we ready?
I think the other vice chair should do the motion.
Representative Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move SJR 39 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves Senate Joint Resolution 39 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? I would just say I really appreciated the discussion here. Having grown up in Idaho and driven through Pendleton frequently on the way home, I have a little bit of an appreciation for the impact and how seriously people in Pendleton take the Roundup. So I'm glad we're able to offer a little recognition, and I hope we can maybe next time we can have a meeting of the committee there to discuss something. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd echo Representative Galizio's comments that even as city slickers can appreciate what the Pendleton Roundup means to this state. And I also appreciated the discussion and learned more in this hearing about the Yanomamo tribe in South America than I have in all previous legislative hearings combined.
Same here. Thank you very much. With that, is there any objection to the motion to send Senate Joint Resolution 39 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation? I don't see any. The motion carries. Senate Joint Resolution 39 goes to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Representative Jensen will carry. That's close to the work session on Senate Joint Resolution 39. And we have one bill remaining. Is that right, Barbara?
Yes.
And open a public hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 30.
SJR 30 expresses support for the Oregon Progress Board in developing Oregon Shines 3.
We have Rita Conrad. I think Representative Gelser might be on her way as well.
Thank you.
Okay.
She was here and then had to return.
Right.
So thank you. My name is Rita Conrad. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Progress Board, and the Pendleton Roundup is a hard thing to follow. I love the Roundup, too. Rodeos. I've never been to the Roundup. I think maybe I should go. So I'm here today in support of Senate Joint Resolution 30, and I believe that's being passed around right now. So I'd like to just offer a few basic pointers out of that one-and-a-half pager that's coming around. The state of Oregon is unique in that 20 years ago in 1989, the governor and the legislature created a societal-level planning process. This was quite remarkable. That resulted in a document called Oregon Shines, which is a high-level strategic plan for the state of Oregon, with companion progress measures called Oregon Benchmarks. And then they decided they didn't want that to sit on the shelf and gather dust like most plans do, so they created an independent Oregon Progress Board to track progress against the plan with those benchmarks and to keep the plan current. So that plan's been in effect since 1989. In 1997, there is statute that says the plan should be updated every so many years. It's now every eight years, we're overdue. But it was updated in 1997 under Governor Kitzhaber, and it has now three goals. It had three goals in 1989, but the new three goals for Oregon Shines 3 in 1997 became a little bit more holistic. There was one goal for economy, that's the jobs goal that you'll see on the sheet. There's one goal for social well-being, that's the goal about engaged, caring, and safe communities. And then there was an environmental goal, which is the healthy, sustainable surroundings. So we've learned quite a bit from this process over the last 20 years. The good news is that we have a set of benchmarks that give us a lens to our progress as a state overall. The bad news is that we know, based on the benchmark data, that we're not where we said we wanted to be 20 years ago. So, for example, Oregon's per capita personal income compared to other states is steadily declining. It's been going down for several years now. Our eighth grade, I think it's a third of our eighth graders cannot read at grade level, and it's even worse for students of color. And I'm sure you all remember last fall when the rankings came out and Oregon was once again ranked as one of the hungriest states in the nation. So there is concern about this. We have learned that Oregon Progress Board, in preparing to do Oregon Shines 3, the second update of the plan, we've had several discussions with policy leaders in education, economy, public safety, the whole series of benchmark categories and policy areas that the benchmarks address. And from each one of those seven panels, we heard a similar theme, and that is that there is fragmentation within our systems and structures. There are many cross-agency, public-private collaborations going on, but we are still somehow not able to crack that nut of getting more into coordinated action within our systems and structures. And it's the systems and structures that drive people's behaviors, in both in state government and outside of state government. Oregon Shines 3 is really important, not only to fulfill the statute, to keep this tradition and legacy going, to update our plan to the current realities, but to draw some attention and create an environment where some of that cross-silo thinking can come together. In my opinion, the Progress Board's work is based on the premise that Oregon's future success is based on three success factors. One is a shared vision. The second one is shared data, and the third one is collaboration. We have all three of those already in abundance in all of our sectors in Oregon, but what I think what might be lacking is that sharing part, the alignment of our partners, the focus on a societal goal. Oregon Shines 3 can provide a data-driven research and dialogue process that can help make that happen for the state of Oregon. So the question then becomes, why did Senator Moore sponsor Senate Joint Resolution 30? The reason is to get the legislature engaged in this high-level strategic planning process. There are many, many partners in the state of Oregon that work on Oregon's economic, social, and environmental well-being. But state government is a giant partner. It allocates funds that is far vaster than all of the foundations in Oregon put together. So the resources that this body allocates is really important. Therefore, it's really important that the legislature, if they would like to have a proactive, future-oriented strategic thinking process, that they engage with this process or something like it. And there are ways to engage the legislature. There are ways that members can engage in this process, as simple as deciding to ratify targets for benchmarks that the Progress Board recommends. Ideally, the legislature would set those targets so that they become more state-level policy instead of recommendations out of the Progress Board. And I think also it's important for legislators to support the process so that Oregonians see that this body recognizes the importance of strategic long-range thinking for the state of Oregon. So those are basically the points in the testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Conrad. Other questions? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Who comes up with the strategic plan?
The Progress Board is charged with coordinating that process, but it's a collaborative process.
Pardon?
Like consisting of who, how many people, from where?
Well, I can talk to you a little bit about how 1 and 2 were done. I'll flash back to Oregon Shines 2. This was really before I came to Oregon. But it was a process that included members of the private sector and also numerous meetings across the state with communities about the benchmarks and about the goals for the state, what they wanted the state to see. As we've designed Oregon Shines 3, we want to do a similar process of outreach to each legislative district or at least regions within the state of Oregon to engage people in strategies that will help us achieve those three big goals of quality jobs, great communities, and healthy, sustainable surroundings. The idea being that the higher the altitude of these goals, the more societal level, that's where we're more likely to find common ground and less areas of adversity, then we can dialogue about how to try to align our efforts to achieve those goals. So to answer your question, it's just about everyone that we can pull into the process. We try to pull into the process. Legislators, communities, local governments, business community, state agencies. It's a broad-based process.
Representative Betts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had the opportunity to participate in, I think, the Oregon Shines 2 with Jeff Tyrens.
Jeff Tyrens, my predecessor.
Mm-hmm. I worked with him a lot. And I don't know how many of those meetings I attended, but it was, I'm going to say, half a dozen or a dozen.
More than two?
More than two. Right, more than two. The thing that struck me about it, and I talked to Jeff about this a number of times, is that as an audit device, I thought it worked really well. That is, taking the temperature of Oregon, I thought that was a nicely thought-through element of the device. But when it came to establishing goals, it was, as you, I think, may have hinted, you can establish the goals, but I'm not sure who looks at them. And thus, the exercise reminded me a little bit of the Northwest Power Planning Council. There's a lot of talk and a lot of planning, and then you're not quite sure who's listening.
Yeah.
And so it seemed to me that in order to make the device work, there had to be some linkage either between budget making or something. And I'm not sure that I heard that space between what's a really good idea and actually making all that thinking make a difference. I've not heard that if it's filled yet, but perhaps you can tell me I'm wrong.
Well, I can't tell you you're wrong totally, but one of the things that has happened since Oregon Shines 2 happened is the Progress Board created what we call the key performance measure system. If you're involved with Ways and Means committees or you work with agencies, you may be aware of what has been called the KPM system. The idea being to connect agencies' highest level, most outcome-oriented measures that they're using to track, to be accountable for the funds that they receive, to Oregon benchmarks. So we ask state agencies as part of the budget process to link their key performance measures to Oregon benchmarks. And that allows us on occasion, when we have the time and the resources to do it, to step back and pull all of the key performance measures in agencies related to, for example, water or education or child well-being, and look at how that all adds up. Evaluate how it all adds up on a sheet of paper and engage agencies in dialogue about how to get into more coordinated action. But also those key performance measures are, I think, increasingly looked at in the Ways and Means process. It does not necessarily translate, though, to members thinking about the higher statewide goals and benchmarks that those KPMs are linked to. And another thing I'd like to mention is that I think the Progress Board is pretty much in agreement that the Oregon Shines 3 process will not be so much about trying to update the goals and the vision. It's pretty hard to argue with quality jobs for everyone and great communities and healthy, sustainable surroundings. But what we really want to focus on is strategy. We think that's one of the big missing pieces in the Oregon story. There are a lot of partners in the public and the private sector who are working on strategies. They have their own goals and measures, and what we want to try to do is create some common ground and alignment so that we can marshal some of those sources and create more of a force to achieve the benchmark targets. So I don't know if that responds to your questions, but.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for that. Well, yeah, I think it does, as well as the device allows you to respond. I still have the problem with the whole concept of planning without power. And so you come to an agency and you say, you know, we've looked at you from a distance. In fact, we've even attended a bunch of your meetings, and we've decided that if you would just do this and this, it would more correctly match what's happening and another agency some distance away or some bigger thing. I mean, there's that piece of how do you actually take all the hard work and thinking and actually make somebody pay attention to it? Because I never saw any problem with the thinking. I thought it was excellent. But I saw a real problem with the results and them not really... And maybe it just isn't going to get there from here. But the problem with that lack of clear mm-hmm. relationship is it's hard then to justify the money, the time, and effort that's spent on it.
Maybe one thing that might also inform a response is to talk about how you are currently relating to the legislature. I get emails from you periodically, but is there new thinking about how that information might be shared with the legislature, who is in position to be making policy decisions and changes?
Chair Reed, Representative Bence, members of the committee, we did make a concerted effort this year when we came out with our latest biennial report, the 2009 benchmark report, to reorganize the information on our website so that each legislator has its his or her own web space on our homepage. So for each Senate and House district, there is a section that you can access from our homepage or from our report generator that allows you to go in and see, for example, some county data for counties in your district in slideshow form. So we try to make that connection. Probably the biggest thing that we try to do, though, related to budget, is that for each Ways and Means Subcommittee, we do a crosswalk, a fairly detailed crosswalk, between the key performance measures from state agencies that link up to, that go through that subcommittee to the benchmarks. So we not only show the measures, but we show the data. And we try to put it all in one spot so that if they have an interest, legislators can go in and get a feel for how that relates to the higher goals. We have worked for several sessions in a row providing some training to Ways and Means Committee members about the key performance measure and the benchmark process. But it is still somewhat elusive achievement to make that connection completely between budgetary decision making and the goals. I have some specific ideas on that. I'm not sure if this is the right platform to share them, but
some of us, I suspect, would be interested in hearing those afterward. I didn't mean to hijack your question.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Are there other questions? The only other question I would ask is just generally where Oregon Transit 3 stands in the process as far as generating a new plan or what your intent is to
The Progress Board has been working, it seems like, for a very long time, probably over 2 years, setting the stage. We've done a lot of groundwork. We've had some partner panel discussions that took about a year and a half. And we did, we raised a little bit of money from foundations to do a fairly robust business plan, but that price tag soon became inappropriate as
the business plan
for Oregon Shines 3. We have a very robust plan that's on our website. So we're now working very closely with Duncan Wise at the Business Council and some partners at Willamette University and the American Leadership Forum to create a lower cost approach to both interviewing, gathering information from interviewing, having local meetings across the state of Oregon and partnering with the Business Council on trends analysis so that we can pull this together.
And what's the timeline on that?
We'd like to have something for the beginning by 2010, so we have something to show candidates in the 2010 election cycle, gubernatorial candidates.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I always had a question about your KPMs. When we get those, they talk about targets. They'll give a percentage or a number, but it doesn't. I don't see any correlation as to, well, did they meet the target? To me, I'm trying to find the usefulness of those key performance measures if you can't compare them.
Well, in every year, September 30th, and the Progress Board no longer directly administers the KPM system. That's been transferred to Budget and Management and Legislative Fiscal. They have a joint. They have two staffers that administer that process that we created. But on September 30th of every year, all state agencies are to produce what they call an annual performance progress report. We have all those actually tracked on the Progress Board website. And in those reports, for each key performance measure, they show both the data and the target. So the data are shown right against the target line. You can see whether they met the target or not. And in fact, if you go to the Progress Board's website and you look at the benchmark KPM links in the left panel, you can click down to a benchmark, and we have grids that show each key performance measure and a check mark as to whether for that report they achieved their target or are on track to meet the target or not.
Okay, so
I'm not sure if that helps you.
Okay, so it's not in the actual key performance reports.
It should be
annual
in the
reports.
Annual. There are probably several documents that you've seen, but the annual performance progress reports that agencies produce, by definition, the purpose of those reports is to show the data against the target and whether they've met the target or not. I'd be happy to help you find this. If that would be helpful.
I'm just looking at one, and I'm not seeing it. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Other questions? Let's see. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It doesn't appear that we've completely emptied the room, but so I'm not sure I need to ask whether the one other person in the room wants to be heard on the on this resolution, but I'm getting a no. So that would conclude the folks who want to testify on Senate Joint Resolution 30. With that, close the public hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 30. Committee, if you'd like, we can move this this bill to the floor. I'll open a work session on Senate Joint Resolution 30. I see a lot of enthusiasm for it. So let's we can wait on this one and have a little more discussion with Ms. Conrad and some of the other issues about it, and decide if we want to bring this this resolution back. A little bit later, we have the time to do that. Let's see, anyone's,
Mr. Chair, are you looking for a motion?
I'm leaving it to the committee here. If you're prepared to do that,
I have no problem moving Senate Joint Resolution to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
I guess I appreciate that, and I guess we better have a roll call vote after some discussion, given the reaction your motion produced there. Is there any discussion of Representative Holby's motion to his motion of Senate Joint Resolution 30 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation? Representative Thatcher?
I will be giving a courtesy yes. I do have some reservations about whether this is really useful, and for now, I'm going to be a courtesy yes.
I appreciate that. I particularly appreciate Representative Benz's comments about the need to better connect the information and the process to the decisions we're making in the legislature. But I do think there is some value in the data and the process that goes on. Representative Benz?
Yeah, thank you. And I'll be joining Representative Thatcher in that courtesy vote. The device has great promise, and it really does. And I know I worked hard on it years back, but it just never seemed to quite get there, and it wasn't for lack of hard work, because a lot of hard work, and I'm not, it would take an awful lot of thinking, and there's been a lot of thinking, but for purposes of moving to the floor, I'll give a courtesy vote also.
Representative Gillian.
I went out of the room to make sure that our friend from Pendleton was cross-marketing with Malala Buckaroo, and I had a good discussion. So if you covered this, I apologize. But costs, we got no expenditure impact here. Did you already cover what this might cost?
Well,
does Oregon Shines 3 basically come under Oregon Progress Board's budget, and so it's just a direction, not a new program?
I would not be prepared to answer that question, but I think that the fact that there's no revenue or fiscal means what we're saying in this resolution is so I think the question here is whether we are prepared to make the statement that we support the idea and the intent. I think the question of cost would come in another form.
Okay. And then the other thing I wonder, those that have laptops up, the stationery doesn't list who the board is, and I'm ignorant on who's on that board or how it's picked. Is that shown someplace quickly?
We can always do it later.
We could ask Ms. Conrad to come back and help us remember.
I should have asked when she was up here. Yeah, I give you the chance.
Representative Holby, while she's coming in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious what the vote was on the Senate side on this resolution.
That we can answer.
Don't answer his question before mine.
Well, she's getting settled. That's okay. We'll get to your question, too, Representative Gilliam. I think it was 28-2.
It was.
I saw that a bit ago.
Let me dig it out.
28-2. Ms. Conrad, perhaps you could enlighten us on the membership of the board and the process by which those folks are selected.
Thank you, Chair Reed, members of the committee, Representative Gilliam. The governor chairs the board statutorily. This governor has not been as engaged as past governors have been, but he does send a representative faithfully to the board, and we do have the ear of the governor through this representative, who is James Sager, the governor's education policy advisor and revenue advisor. We, up until very recently, Mike Jordan, who was chief operating officer of Metro government in the Portland area, was the vice chair. He has just resigned, and so we are working with the governor's office as we speak to fill that vacancy and two other vacancies. John Miller, who is a businessman from the Salem area, sits on the board. Annabelle Jaramillo, who is the county commissioner from Benton County, sits on the board. Senator Morse sits on the board, as does Representative Gelser. Joe Johnson, who is retired community college president, sits on the board. Bob Landauer, who is retired editor of the Oregonian, sits on the board. There are nine members at large, aside from the elected representatives and the governor that sit on the board. So.
And they're appointed by the governor, confirmed by the Senate?
Not confirmed by the Senate, appointed by the governor.
Thank you. Representative Gilliam, any other questions?
No.
Thank you very much. Representative Bailey, then we'll come to Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It sounds like a great program, and if the point of the resolution is to express our support for the intent as opposed to the methodology and the budget, that's one thing. I guess I would express a general opinion that I'm skeptical of the value of these resolutions, and I'm not entirely sure what we as a legislature accomplish by declaring that we support something in concept or in theory. I think we do that later on with our votes and with our budget allocations.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Representative Galizio?
I just wanted to express my support. From a Ways and Means member, I find the information is very useful to take a substantive look, a big picture look, and I think one of the challenges that all of us face is, as quote, citizen legislators, there's so much information and we have limited time, but when I have a chance to look at the information and study it, it is very valuable, and it provides a perspective that ultimately is very useful. It's sort of to get out of the trees and sort of take a big picture look. I just at that level, it's very important. And so from the Ways and Means perspective, where you can really get into the minutiae, I find that the Progress Board's work is very useful. So and supportive. I think we need a full-time legislature. But that's a different discussion.
It's a nice place for me to kind of buttress that comment by saying that as a person who is not a member of the Ways and Means Committee, I find this information helpful, too, because I don't get the chance to get into as much of the detail and minutia. So the big picture stuff is helpful to me. And until we're able to have a full-time legislature or, short of that, more full-time staff who can help us with that kind of analysis, I think this is good information, good help. And it reminds me, in fact, when I was in graduate school, our managerial accounting professor said at the end of the class, if he were to run into us some years in advance, we only had to remember two things for him to consider his class a success. So I haven't forgotten: incremental analysis, and you get what you measure. So hopefully this is in line with that. Any other comments? I don't see any. Shall we have a roll call vote on the motion to send the resolution to the floor with a be adopted recommendation, please?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Benz?
Aye.
Vice Chair Galizio?
Aye.
Chair Reed?
Aye. Motion having received the required majority is declared passed. Senate Joint Resolution 30 goes to the floor with the adopted recommendation. I'm sorry, I just heard the sigh. I could have saved us some time by just asking for objections.
Are we done with that vote?
We are done with that vote.
I just want to say that Representative, may I?
Yeah, please.
That Representative Galizio, you know, has the best arguments in the building. And he had me all the way. I mean, this whole thing about helpful information, which I'm not aware of.
Full-time legislator.
He said full-time legislator.
Well, so, anyway. Please don't conflate anything in the resolution. That was my own editorial comment that I would like to excise in the record for purposes of this particular vote.
Yeah.
And before we close the work session on Senate Joint Resolution 30, we need a carrier. Given that Representative Gelser is on the board, and I was so incapable of getting her up here while she was here, she had to leave for her other committee. We'll ask her to carry.
Is it possible to put time limits on the carrier?
It is. We have a clock on the floor. I don't know if you've
fire up.
Noticed that.
Well, no.
There were some people who seemed to be using that up yesterday and today, and the time from other people. But we'll,
why are you looking at me?
I'm just answering your question.
It's 10 minutes, right?
Yes, for the carrier. That's right. That's right.
Are you looking through me?
So with that, I'll close the work session on Senate Joint Resolution 30. Thank you for your attendance. If there aren't any other comments for the good of the order, we're adjourned.
One of my colleagues had a great comment.
You don't think we should?